How's it going, guys? Thank you for joining me for another episode of the Vietes Rundown. I'm your host, Manny Vietes. So on the last couple of podcasts, I talked about Lakers basketball, Clippers basketball as well. I brought in a couple of guests. So I want to keep that tradition going. And then on this episode, I wanted to move over to the Eastern Conference. I want to talk about the defending champion, Cleveland Cavaliers. So I want to bring in my friend, Chris Manning from SB Nation's Fear the Sword Cavs blog and Locked On Cavs podcast host. How are you doing today, Chris?
I'm doing good, man. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, man. Cool. So I just wanted to just start off with your overall impressions of the season so far. Have the Cavs lived up to the expectations so far? And actually, are they going to go to another finals and have a three-peat with the Warriors?
So I think that's like an interesting thing to answer because the injuries, I think, sort of skew what I think of them. But I think if we're looking at them in terms of a functioning team, this is the least drama we've seen from them in the second LeBron era. I think even like, I mean, I don't know if you can tell from the outside as much, but like when I'm at games and I'm talking to them in the locker room and you see how they're acting with one another, the guys actually are just sort of in line with one another. Kevin Love is like the cornerstone of this. Is just in a better place. You can just tell. And I think like you can tell they're coasting you, but they're still four games up on Boston, I think, as we record this, and they're obviously playing and stuff, but they've been really, really good. I think the J.R. Smith thing sort of complicates it because you're going to have to see how he fits back in. Kevin Love, of course, has to come back. And those are sort of caveats, but I think this might be the best LeBron team we've seen.
Ever.
Yeah, I mean, that's like the thing, right? I think it's clearly the most talented roster right now that we've seen in the second time back. There's no really Sean Marion or Mike Miller hanging around. And they're deep in a certain sense. So I think they're really good. I think they're performing at a certain level, and I want to see what that next gear would be in the playoffs because I do think there is room for improvement. I mean, just in February, they had the best offensive rating in the league with Kevin Love missing the last 2 weeks, with no J.R. Smith, with Amon Shumpert just shooting putridly from three, and this team was great in offense, had the best offensive rating in the league by about 4 points. They were in the bottom third in defense over the same stretch. So I think there's some tightening that needs to get done there. But they're still really, really good. And as long as Kevin Love is healthy, I think they can make it to the finals. Again, they should make it to the finals. And it'd be a shock if they didn't.
No, yeah, they definitely should. I mean, you saw the moves that the Raptors made, and Celtics really haven't made any moves to kind of compete, which we'll find out in a little bit if it's going to be a good game or not. But so where do you think J.R. Smith is going to fall in with that? Do you think he's going to jump back into the starting lineup, take over Kyle Korver's role a little bit, or is he going to stay in that second unit and presumably play with the new with the about to be acquired Andrew Bogut and Deron Williams?
I think that's a fascinating question. It's one I don't know if we know it because J.R. Smith has been it's sort of how this worked out with him was that he wasn't supposed to start when he got traded to the Cavs, right? Like, he was supposed to be the guy coming off the bench, but Shumpert was hurt. He started, and it worked great. He started last year, was obviously great, got paid this summer. And he wasn't good before he went down. I think he was getting himself back into shape. I think the way to answer this is the Cavs have to decide what is going to best serve him. Because he's a guy that not only is probably going to have – he couldn't run for the first couple weeks after he broke his thumb because he just couldn't. You can't run with a broken thumb, as weird as that sounds, because you have your legs, you can't have the full motion of your body. And then he also has, I mean, just in terms, not in terms of basketball, his daughter was born prematurely. This is a guy we don't know how he's doing mentally, really. I think he's got a locker room that's going to have his back, but this guy's had a rough year. And the Cavs have to just decide, I think, where does he fit best? And I think him and Korver, to me, should be the guys getting the bulk of the minutes at the two. I think you have to play Shumpert some, but he's been such a bad shooter that he's starting right now, and I think there's a chance he's out of the rotation come playoff time. And I think he might need to be out of the rotation in terms of the Cavs maximizing who they have.
You're talking about Shumpert, right? Being out of the rotation.
Yeah, no,
I couldn't agree more. I think that I definitely think that when it comes playoff time, Shumpert's that high intensity guy that you need out there. But as far as, you know, starting and being, his role is not needed as a shooter and as a consistent type of scorer. Especially when you got one of the best three-point shooters in the league in Kyle Korver, and then you're going to add J.R. Smith in there that could just chuck up a three from, you know, 25 plus out. But, So I think it's just going to be like a type of like a, you know, game-by-game basis to see when J.R. Smith can actually fill his way back in. Obviously, having a premature baby and going through all that's definitely, definitely bigger than basketball. But so the Cavs ended up getting Deron Williams. He ended up clearing waivers, and he's going to play in his first game tonight. He's going to be wearing number 31, and a lot of people think he's trolling the Warriors because 3-1 lead wearing number 31. I don't know if you heard about that, but that was just
one. So yeah, so he got asked about this. He had a little scrum in Cleveland the day they announced him and stuff, and he got asked why he's wearing 31. He says it's old high school number, and then he also said that the Cavs didn't have any single digit numbers left, which isn't true because 6 and 9 are available.
Yeah, but they did, right?
yeah, there were numbers available, and then he did the old high school number thing. I haven't checked. I have to just in my mind think that 31 has to be some sort of. Like I hope in my heart, like I wanted that to be true. I don't know if it is true, but I hope that it is. I really hope.
Yeah, I feel like everyone in a Cleveland wants it to be true, because then
my fellow Cavs Twitter members were like celebrating 3-1 day. like it's still a thing, as much as that joke is. It's definitely played itself off a little bit.
Yeah, and so besides the number, so the Cavs got their backup point guard. They got what they needed without going and grabbing someone before the trade deadline. It was in the buyout season. So what is Deron Williams going to bring to the table? I know you talked to him about talked about him a lot on your podcast today. So if you could just talk about a little bit of what he can bring and how can he help that second unit, and will he be seeing, he'll obviously be seeing time on the court with LeBron, and how is that going to mesh well?
Yeah, so they're going to definitely play together. LeBron was asked about this, and he was like, yeah, we're going to play together on that second unit with LeBron plus the bench. I think it gives them something they haven't had maybe ever in the second LeBron era, because I think Williams, he's not quite as intense as Matthew Dellavedova. He's probably not as physical as a defender as Matthew Dellavedova, but it's a guy that he's bigger than Deli in certain regards. He's a better ball handler. He's a better creator for others. And he's a good off-ball shooter. I think statistically he rates out decently well. I think at like 38% on spot-up threes, on catch-and-shoot threes. He'll get more open looks when you're playing with LeBron. That's just how it works. I mean, Kyle Korver will just run around and like gets open looks, and I don't know how teams lose him because he's playing with LeBron. The one thing I'm really intrigued to see is if they run a version of the Kyrie-LeBron pick-and-roll with Deron Williams, because I don't know how much it's going to be as effective with Deron setting the screen like Kyrie will do with LeBron. But the other way around, with Deron sitting it for LeBron, is something I really like, because if you watch the Cavs now, they sometimes do this thing where they go with this big lineup with guys that are 6'5 and above, and the only way they get creative with ball handling is with Deron Williams bringing up the ball and throwing it to LeBron at the elbow. Deron Williams is going to give them a chance to offer them something different, to take some of the pressure off LeBron. Now, I'm very excited to see how it fits. I think he could be the best buyout signing of any team, and I think that that's obviously kind of not a super high bar to clear, because like Matt Barnes isn't that good anymore. Jose Calderon, not that good anymore. Anyone the Clippers get is probably not going to be that impactful of a player. I think Deron Williams could be a key rotation piece come May and June, honestly. And it does depend, of course, if he's healthy, because he does have that history of getting dinged up and slowing down a bit.
Yeah, he obviously wanted to go to a team that's going to win, that has an opportunity to win a championship, because he's never gotten that far. Mm-hmm. And you know, he has those ties still to Kyle Korver. And I remember I was watching something where Kyle was just reeling him in slowly, just saying, you know what, like come here. The guys are great. Playing with LeBron's great. You know, so I mean, I obviously see why he wants to go there. He's gonna definitely have a definite role, and is going to be used in more of like a hey, I need you basis, rather than like, oh, let's you know, see where we go type of thing, and maybe not, you know, maybe not use you, but he's definitely going to be used. So I wanted to move away from the point guard situation, and I want to go to the big man situation, because that seems like it's always fluctuating with the Cavs. You bring in Channing Frye last year, and then now you have Kevin Love playing at his best this year. He actually went to the All-Star game again. Couldn't play because he's injured. And there was a whole bunch of rumors that the Cavs were going to trade for, or the whatever, the Cavs and Knicks wanted Melo, and you know that whole Carmelo.
Yeah. Yeah.
And how was Cleveland in response to not picking up or not getting Melo, and Kevin Love's injury just so happening to have happened around that same time, and everyone just wondering, you know, maybe should we have gotten Melo and, you know, gave away Kevin Love because that's what the Knicks were asking for?
Yeah, I think the not trading for Melo thing is just unequivocally a good thing, because I think like Melo gets a lot of crap, but like Pete Melo was phenomenal, right? Like, this is a guy who could get buckets from anywhere. He's probably best served at this point. Like, Melo's great, and I mean, I think if he's not if he's not in New York and he's not asked to be the face of the Knicks, like, I think he's viewed differently, and I don't think that's a crazy thing to say. I think if he's, you know, if he's the best player in like Indiana, or if he's the best player like on a team that isn't the Knicks and isn't in that dysfunctional of a team, he probably looks better, and he does deserve some culpability because he does sign that contract and everything. But yeah. I don't think the Cavs it's like a tricky thing with Melo, because I think his legacy is going to be impacted forever. Then I don't know if that's fair, but if I'm the Cavs, I don't know if I'd trade for Melo just because he's got bad knees too, and he's a little bit older. And he's not going to rebound like Kevin Love. I think if you could, like, in the dream world, he's a guy you get, you know, in another way to get another guy to fit in on the team. Like, Dwayne Wade is, like, someone Cavs fans have always sort of wanted because he's LeBron's friend and all this stuff. But that's not realistic, right? Like, he got paid by the Bulls. Mm-hmm. He should have taken that payday. It's the same thing with Melo. He should keep getting paid as long as he can. I'll be very intrigued to see, like, if Melo, like, does – you know, if the Cavs don't win this summer, I feel like everything sort of gets on the table, especially if they lose in a very bad way, right? Like, that could be something we hear about again come July, right? Like, and that can make sense. And if Kevin Love gets picked apart in the finals, then maybe we hear about this again. But I think for right now, Love should be fine. And I worry a little bit about how long it would take him to get back into the flow. But I'm not sure Melo would have actually solved a ton, just because I don't know how much he actually is an upgrade over Kevin Love at this point.
Yeah, So Kevin Love's injury just happened to, you know, like as soon as the injury happens, everyone's like, okay, you know, like I don't know if they're going to go to the finals. I don't know if they're going to make the playoffs. I don't know if they're going to go far, you know.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's a big chunk of the scoring taken away. And then you have Tristan Thompson come in there and playing out of his mind, just, you know, hustle basketball. And then you have Channing Frye, another shooting big. And but then now you bring in Andrew Bogut to add to that rotation. He's won a championship, sat on the sidelines last year in the finals. What is he going to bring to the Cavs? Like LeBron has all of his pieces now. He has his backup point guard. He has his, you know, big log center in the middle. And I feel like this is going to be it. If they're going to win a championship and be solidified, you know, win two in a row in Cleveland, this is going to be the time. There's just no other way around it, because I feel like, yeah, you're right. If they go to the finals, they go to the playoffs, and something goes wrong, you know, maybe like Kevin Love doesn't come back, and he's not acting like how he was, you know, when he, like, before he got injured, and then maybe, you know, Bogut doesn't fit in, or Darren Williams doesn't work out, or maybe Kyle Korver, or, you know, it could be anybody. But and then you can kind of pick apart the team after the season, and, you know, just point out who you want to still be there and who you want to go. But so Andrew Bogut's interesting. He obviously played for the Warriors, and he can definitely, you know, cater to the Cavs' needs of telling them obviously how their systems run, how things go down over there, and what to expect with the Warriors. So that's pretty cool. It's kind of just, you know, having another thing in LeBron's back pocket. So what have you heard about Andrew Bogut so far? I know Darren Williams kind of reeled him in to go play with him in Cleveland, mm-hmm. and Bogut had ties with Tyronn Lue before too. So that's pretty cool. And Richard Jefferson. So
yeah, it's a weird thing, because I think he could help in certain ways. I think he's a good rebounder. I think he's going to take some of the burden off Tristan Thompson to play an insane amount of minutes. I think that's unequivocally a good thing. I think if you look at the interesting thing to look at is how much is he going to play in the playoffs? And I'm a little bit unsure about this at the moment, just because Channing Frye, as much as he's had some struggles of late, I think is a very useful player for the Cavs because of his shooting. And Bogut's just never going to be a shooter, right? Like, Andrew Bogut is never going to be this guy who's going to pop out and hit threes. He's never going to be this guy who's going to stretch the defense. He's going to provide rim protection, which the Cavs definitely need. He's going to provide some really nice screening, which I think will help. And he provides depth. The leg injuries worry me, but I do think this is a guy that could play in the playoffs. And I think him being useful right now is probably the – if the Cavs believe that he can play a role right now, because from what we understand about his deal, he wanted to go somewhere he could play, right? Like he wanted to have a role on a good team. Like if the Cavs are giving him that, then I maybe expect him to see him play 12 minutes a night, and we'll see when he plays. It doesn't look like he's going to be with the team until like next Monday. Looks like they're going to play this 3-game road trip, and he'll make his debut in Cleveland. But I think he's probably going to get a chance to be a role player right away. And if he's really bad, the question will become, can Tyronn Lue just pull him out of there and say, okay, this didn't work? And how long do you give it to sort of work? Because I think it's a matchup-based thing with him. And if he's not healthy and he gets hurt again, you kind of have to write him off, and that it is what it is, I think.
Mm-hmm. Did he actually go meet with other teams, or
I think from my understanding, he talked to a bunch of teams. He talked to a bunch of teams about how he might fit, what his role might be, and it looks like it came down to Cleveland and Boston. And from people that I know that cover the Warriors and have seen their tweets about this, I wonder how much revenge in him thinking Cleveland is my best chance to get revenge on Golden State kind of played a factor in that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like it happened so quickly. I thought he was gonna actually wait till the nighttime to do it. It happened like midday. Midday here, over there, kind of nighttime. But it's obviously a no-brainer. If you're a big man, you want to go win a championship. I feel like you go play with LeBron, unless you don't want to go, be back with your old team. But Yeah. So the Cavs had the big man game cover. Now we're gonna have to just see how it pans out with Andrew Bogut down there. Now we're gonna move on to the big pieces. We're moving on to LeBron and Kyrie. So LeBron got his team he desperately wanted. He definitely said he needed help. They were too top heavy towards about 20 games ago or whatever. So when he made that statement, he has his backup point guard, center, shooters. He has everything he needs. Does LeBron have any more room to complain this year?
No, like he could mention the health, I think, could be something he brings up. But I think David Griffin has assembled sort of a kind of perfect roster on LeBron James. You got the effing playmaker in Darren Williams. You got Andrew Bogut. You got I think every guy that's currently on the roster, with Jordan McRae now being cut, could conceivably play. Like, I don't think DeAndre Liggins is particularly good, but if you needed to play him as a defender and you could hide him on the corner and leverage his shooting ability by putting him in the corner, where statistically that's the one place he has been a good shooter. If you look at James Jones, I call his roster spot the James Jones really well still, but he's not a guy who's actually like a very good player as a defender anymore. And he's a very nice guy, a veteran leader that the locker room has really needed, but he's never going to actually play. But I think every guy on the team has a role. I think this is the most complete roster top to bottom that David Griffin has ever assembled for LeBron. It certainly took some luck. It certainly took some kind of things working out. Like the fact that Kyle Korver was traded and then the Hawks were like, nah, we're not going to trade Paul Millsap is just kind of mind boggling to me, kind of thinking about, because they wanted a wing at the deadline too. So David Griffin has given LeBron everything he needs. I think there's not really anything LeBron can complain about except for health. And I think you get him rest, you get Kyrie rest, you get Kevin Love back, you get JR back. And I think the Cavs are in a very, very good position to defend and potentially kind of run through the East if everything breaks right.
Oh yeah, they swept the East last year, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean,
they lost two games in Toronto, and LeBron had this quote that's like an underrated LeBron quote where he was like, they asked him if this was like a stressful thing for him, basically. And he was like, I've been through stuff in my career before, and I've been through adversity. This isn't adversity. So like just peak petty LeBron. And I don't think the East phases him one bit. Like, I don't think he looks at the Celtics as like an actual team, like an actual threat to him.
No, yeah. If I was Tyronn Lue, I would probably sit LeBron and Kyrie and just fall in the playoffs somewhere, just wait till the playoffs. Like, you're gonna make it to the finals. I mean, to the Eastern Conference Finals and definitely probably to the finals. So I feel like you should just like preserve those guys and just wait for the Warriors, because you're not gonna end up getting a home court advantage in the finals anyways. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they like playing at the Q, so I wouldn't, I definitely don't see him tanking. So
Yeah.
So LeBron is averaging 8.9 assists this year. That's his career high, and he's done it with his shooters. You know, he's you can definitely see out there that he's not looking for his own shot as much. He's only looking for his teammates. And then maybe if he needs to go score or if he's needed, he goes out there and just, you know, he obviously can do it. But yeah, he's looking for the pass first. He doesn't really want to look for his own shot. And is this just a cornerstone into why people are this is a part of his game that people just overlook sometimes that they just don't appreciate as much, like how it happened with Magic Johnson. You know, Magic Johnson has 5 championships, but people just overlook him just a little bit because he wasn't that prolific, you know, guy like Kobe is or whatnot. Is LeBron's greatness overlooked now in a sense?
It's like a tricky thing because I think there are like a segment of – I think like the community you and I are a member of, like basketball Twitter as a whole, has a big respect for LeBron. And like we sort of know how good this guy is. And I think last year's finals were proof that he, you know, is this like all-time great player and this guy who's defined a generation and complete and did things that maybe no other player of this generation could do. At the same time, like I think – there is a segment of fans out there that say this guy's maybe overrated. Like, I mean, I saw a Celtics fan today tweeting at the NBA stats account because LeBron's like defensive rating was high. And like 20 years from now, we're going to think LeBron was this sort of like trash NBA player and like he was overrated. But I think anyone like that's doing the game rationally should just sort of know like LeBron's great. Don't overthink it. Don't nitpick this too much. This is the best player of the generation. This is the best player, in my opinion, since Michael. And I think it's pretty clearly. For me, it's pretty clearly like Durant's been great, and a bunch of other stuff. So it's pretty interesting.
Oh yeah, it's. I mean, you don't think Kobe?
Kobe is like great, but the Kobe thing is to me is like a little bit. And I think I don't know. LeBron's just okay. Let me ask you this: where would you put Kobe post Jordan? Where does Kobe in your rankings of best players since Jordan?
So post Jordan, where is Kobe?
Like that's sort of hard to define because there's like some flux of generations weaving there. But
yeah, I definitely have LeBron 1, and I have Kobe 2. I've had that for a while now. I'm from the West Coast, but I've never been a Kobe guy.
Yeah,
but I definitely think that LeBron's an overall player. Like regardless if you win 6 championships and you know you're like a you're that dog of a scorer, I just feel like you see it almost every game. Like LeBron's just that guy. Like when he orchestrates that team, there's no one in the NBA that can do that, and there's probably there's very few players in history that have ever been able to do that. When he walks into a room, it's just like everyone just like. I don't know. I'm not trying to fangirl because that's not what I do. But when I was at I was in New Orleans for All Star Weekend, and you know when all these players were walking back to the media availability, you know they're strolling back through the media. You know no one's even caring. They're like if they're walking by whatnot, and then you see LeBron walk off and walk right by everybody, and then there's just a group, just a weird hovering of people just like walking around him. And that was the only time I've really been close to LeBron and asked him a question and whatnot. And so it was just the first dose I got of like, dang, like this guy really is that guy. And from around the world too, there was thousands of reporters there that were like all from around the world. And his media sessions were stupid, insane. I've never seen something like that. And I mean, obviously I would never have seen something like that in Sacramento,
I think Kobe would be 3 or 4. I think probably 3 or 4 because I think Duncan. I put Duncan in. I think KG.
Really
ahead of him. Yeah, I mean, I think Duncan's just like I love Duncan, and I think him and Kobe and KG is close. But I think to me it's Duncan. Like I think just what he did, like how good he did it for that long, the efficiency of his game and everything like that. I think I would go Duncan 2 with Kobe being 3. I think that's where I put it. And it's like the Kobe thing is like so fascinating because it's like NBA players love Kobe to this extreme degree. Like Kyrie Irving called him in the, like you probably know this, Kyrie Irving called him in the locker room after the finals. Like Kyrie called his dad and he called Kobe, and because he wanted to share that moment with Kobe. And there's like this like crazy amount of respect for Kobe and that Mamba mentality amongst players. That's sort of a very fascinating kind of mental thing.
Well, yeah, especially when you're on a, like when you're on a team now where you're the one winning championships, and you grew up watching, you know, you grew up watching Kobe, you know, just rack him in. And I mean, that was a cool thing. When I saw that Kyrie did that. So now we're gonna move on to him. He's been a little bit of a disappointment on defense, but you know, what can you, I mean, you have to, you know, you give a little bit, you take a little bit. He's basically runs that Cavs team. If they don't have him, I feel like they don't. They probably could go to the finals, obviously, with LeBron and just get like a tier two point guard. But so what are your likes and dislikes of Kyrie's game this season? What have you seen? What do you want to see moving forward? And what does he need to do to win another finals?
I really liked he's been pretty efficient this year. I think Kyrie Irving has figured a lot of stuff out. I think he had a really great – and he's been a really good passer too. The other night he hit his 2,000th career assist and he had this quote. And he's not the biggest fan of doing media, but he goes – not bad for it. And he said he, when they asked about the 2006, he said not bad for a guy who doesn't pass. And I think he has like actually improved as a distributor. Like he's averaging in, you know, pure assist stats don't mean a ton always, but he's averaging the second most of his career by, and it's only by 0.1 that it's below his, All-Star team in 2013-14. I think he's found his role with LeBron better. The two things I think I'd like to see him improve on would be, I think defensively, just the work ethic, getting around screens all the time would be good, and just the effort there, especially in the playoffs. And two, I think he does over dribble. I do think Kyrie sometimes can get himself into trouble by over dribbling, kind of trying to do too much and not making the quickest read. I think if he fixes that, a lot of the issues with his game sort of can go away. Like, I think the way he's viewed is somewhat fair. But I think it's sort of a little off of the reality of what he is. I think it's like a blend of that he is that one-dimensional guy, but I do think there are some evolving dimensions with his game.
He's what, 23?
Yeah, Kyrie, I believe, is 24, and he's had a really, really bonkers way to develop, right? Like, this is a guy who got drafted number one after not playing at all really at Duke, got drafted by a really bad Cavs team, got played for some really dysfunctional Cavs teams under some bad coaches. And then it's after 3 years of that, it's like, okay, we got LeBron James. Now you're going to contend for a title. Like, those switches are sort of – that's like a crazy switch. And he's performed really, really well in what they've asked him to do. And I think he deserves a lot of credit for that.
Yeah, it's his first season with LeBron. Goes to his first playoff game. Goes to the finals. You know, it's just and he actually held his own. Mm-hmm. You know, he didn't. You know, you're playing against Steph Curry. You know, it's kind of. I mean, he definitely could have let the spotlight overshadow his game, but he didn't. And but you know, he showed flashes, and then it obviously showed last year in the finals when he won that game for him. And do you think it was Kyrie's shots, or do you think it was LeBron's defense at the end that won the game?
Kevin Love, not Kevin Love, stop. I think the block. I think, like, the block sets the tone for everything, and Kyrie gets credit for that shot. It's, like, both, like, I don't know. Like, the block to me will be the most memorable play, probably. Mm-hmm. I guess that's the only way for me to answer that. And, like, just because of how crazy that block was, I think that has to be the most memorable play for me. But the Kyrie shot, too, was just, like, That was classic Kyrie. That was a classic sort of Kyrie do his thing and take the shot from a spot. He actually says he likes shooting from there, even like before last year. That was a big thing for him.
Yeah, that's what every, you know, player grows up, you know, wanting to do. Taking that high pressure shot, step back, and one of the best players in the league's face. You know, that was just, I don't know. Watching it from over here, I just couldn't. You know, I was just like, wow. I could not even believe that just happened. Especially just coming back from that, from going 3-1, you know, and just it was just insane. I knew at the moment that what was it, game five, or maybe it was a game four, when LeBron blocked Curry, and then, you know, Curry kind of just like walked away underneath the basket, and then like LeBron looked back at him and said something like, "Man," he's like, "Man, get that mess out of here," or something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's when I like thought that like that moment when he just did that to Steph and then just trash talked him right there. That's when I was like, okay, no, there's gonna be a game seven. Like, there's no way that like LeBron's out there talking mess and he's not gonna back it up. That like as a LeBron fan growing up from when I was a kid, I just that moment was just that I'll always remember that moment in the series. Not I'm gonna say more than the block, but I just that was a whole momentum shift in the whole series. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you saw that, but that was just
that was like a LeBron. Like I love. There's a picture that someone screen capped LeBron's face in that moment, and it's one of my favorite moments from that finals. Like that last game just had, and those last two games really just have so much stuff that as someone who grew up watching the Cavs and then like ended up covering them, it's all that. It's just mind boggling in so many ways for me.
Oh yeah,
and just like it's just like I hope every NBA fan someday that when their team is at that level and like they're seeing people like their people of their city react in a certain way, I hope everyone gets to experience that someday because it was something I will never ever forget.
Man, I wish I could even have something that's even close to that. I'm from Las Vegas, and you know we don't have no sports teams except now we have the Las Vegas Golden Knights. But
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but you know, Sacramento, there's not going to be something like that happening soon. So,
do you think Vegas will be a good NBA team, like an NBA host city? Because that's like one of the people that when they talk about expansion, that's always seems to be one of the cities that comes up.
Yeah. So when the summer league's here, the summer league's awesome. You know, there's players. You know, there's coaches, there's agents, there's scouts. Everyone's here in Vegas. It's like it becomes the mecca of basketball for, you know, a week and a half, 2 weeks. And it does great. There's a lot of people who come out. The fans, practice fans. It's separated. I don't know. Have you been before to the summer league?
No, I think this will be. I'm very excited. This should be my first year this upcoming year.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I'll see you out here then. So
yeah.
But yeah, the so the summer league set up. There's two arenas at UNLV that are back to back, and they literally just have games going on all day from. Mm-hmm. Tonight and you switch between both games, and there's tons of people that come out. The promotion's great. The strip is just popping off during that time. There's so many people that just come around here, and the only thing that has a damper on Vegas basketball was that 2007 All-Star game when the city was bouncing at that time, but then the housing market sucked at that time. So people were just, I don't know, there were a lot of crazy things going on here in Vegas. And then all the clubs, all the strips, all the clubs and the strip. And then there was a whole bunch of, you know, minor things that happened, but the crime was just so high during that weekend that all the money that the All-Star game brought to Vegas during that weekend was great, but there was such a damper put on it because of all the crime that happened. There was like a shooting in a club with some like Atlanta or like South game bangers or something like that. And I just like, that's the only thing that the NBA looks at and say, okay, well, like we had the All-Star game there before. I don't know if it's going to be, you know, a successful thing moving, you know, like moving in the future. But
yeah.
I would love to see an expansion team here. I feel like it's a great city. All that's changed now. We actually have a new arena. That's where the Golden Knights are going to be playing. It's literally in the middle of the strip. Perfect location. I don't even know how they literally built an arena right there. It's almost identical to a Staples Center. I don't know if you've seen it. The T-Mobile Arena.
Yeah, I've seen like these pictures of it, and I know that's like where a lot of UFC cards I think are at that arena, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. I'd
be very intrigued to see what it would be like in Vegas, just because I'm not like big on the like this is something we don't need obviously get into a lot, but I don't think like I don't love the idea of the NBA in Louisville, like just something about that seems like weird to me because it's like a college basketball town.
Okay, you don't want to just in yeah you don't want to take
yeah
that. Yeah but
yeah if, and like yeah, but so Vegas would make sense if you need if the if it, especially if that hockey team does well, like maybe that's a reason to go.
I mean you throw down like one of the least major sports here in Vegas and you see how it does first, and then you just kind of, you know, take your sample size from there. Yeah, so mm-hmm. I mean I'll like to see basketball here. I'd be definitely a fan of the Vegas, you know, whatever aces or whatever it is. But so going back to Cavs basketball, is this LeBron's team now? Or I mean, it always has been, but does Tyronn Lue have control over this team? Is he the guy right now, or is LeBron still the orchestrator and the, you know, the guy that's basically calling all the shots in the timeouts, you know, telling his guys to go here, telling his guys to go there, or is Tyronn Lue what's going on there? Because when I watch games, I see LeBron being that vocal guy, and then when they pan over to Tyronn Lue, he's just standing there, you know, like I feel like he just stands there. I don't know.
Yeah, Lue has an ability to connect with LeBron that I don't think really many other players or many other coaches have, right? Like, I think you are seeing him play a role with LeBron that David Blatt just couldn't have played.
Mm-hmm.
David Blatt could not connect with LeBron. Like everything we know about LeBron and David Blatt, it's already way out there. We don't need to get into that. I think Lue has enough respect to LeBron, like, trust him, and I think everyone in that locker room respects Tyronn Lue, and I think that was not the case with David Blatt, and I think that just cannot be overstated. Like, LeBron, of course, is going to have a lot of say. He's going to have a lot of sway within the organization in the locker room, but Tyronn Lue is a guy who I think could call anybody out in that locker room. He called out LeBron James during the finals, and when he does that, I think he has something that I think is essential to probably coaching LeBron. Like, LeBron respects him, and that's really what you want out of your coach with LeBron. Aside from being a great coach, like, I think you need that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just don't see, you know, I haven't seen like another coach connect with LeBron how he has. Mm-hmm. I thought back down in Miami that Eric Spoelstra kind of just got overpowered by LeBron at times. I don't know if you remember, but at times where he just like walked by him on the bench, just brushed his shoulder against him, you know. Like, it was just little things like that where I just, you know, I think LeBron's mental capacity, I mean, his, like, basketball IQ is so high that he just thinks he just knows everything, which is great because, you know, all the greats, you know, think that. But, no, I really do think that he just so heartily thinks that, you know, and that's what Magic Johnson has going on for him too, because Magic is out there just, you know, his basketball IQ is so high. That's why people, you know, put the faith in him to be not like the Lakers, you know, operations guy. So, you know, like LeBron's, I mean, I'm LeBron's IQ is definitely higher than Tyronn Lue's basketball IQ. I'm just going to put that out there. I definitely think that that's, you know, like a stated fact, right? Or no?
Yeah, I think, he's absurd. He's just absurdly, he knows everything. The way he can just read the floor and stuff, it's crazy.
No, yeah. So you know, whether LeBron's orchestrating the team, whether Tyronn Lue's orchestrating the team, it really doesn't matter. When you get all these players together, like Kyrie, Kevin Love, LeBron, you know, all these pieces that they brought in, I really don't see that, you know, if it is LeBron or Tyronn Lue calling the shots, it's more or less the whole team. It's not just one of them just making the decisions, but they're just the ones that are just going to lead it, you know. But so the Raptors made moves, and we haven't talked about that yet. I watched a couple of their games so far when they have PJ Tucker and Serge Ibaka. They're now looking like the team that I think that they're going to play they would probably play in the, what would it be, the second round.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, What are you looking forward to in that series if that does happen? I feel like they match up pretty well. They always give each other a hard time during the regular season. So what would be going on there?
So I think if Lowry's healthy, they certainly can give the Cavs a run. I think they'd probably have the best chance of beating Cleveland. Ibaka, I think, is just an upgrade for them that you can't really, you know, throw down just because he's not Pascal Siakam, like Siakam or whatever he pronounced last name. He's just a better player than him, however you want metric you want to use. I think additionally, I think PJ Tucker is someone they can throw with LeBron. They can try to use him and Damari Carroll now. I don't really love everything that they have, but I do think Toronto can improve. But if Lowry's unhealthy, I don't know how much it matters. Like, if he is not good to go healthy, rested, I don't know how much Toronto actually can do against the Cavs, because Lowry presents problems because of what he can do against Kyrie, because of his ability as a scorer and a distributor and off-ball shooter. He really makes Kyrie work, and you can't just slide Kyrie onto DeRozan because of how big DeRozan is. So I think Lowry has to be healthy for me to consider Toronto an actual threat.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I obviously think that Cavs are just going to, you know, clearly just go to the finals.
Yeah, I do agree with that, though. Like, I think if you have Toronto is at their 100% best, I don't think they're beating Cleveland.
No, yeah. I just have to mention these other teams because you can't just keep on saying, you know, that they're just going to blow through everybody because, mm-hmm. you know, a three-peat in the finals has never happened before. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if it's one side or the other, I actually think that the Warriors could possibly lose before they
get this Durant thing is really fascinating, right? Like if he's not healthy for the second round and they play Utah, like that's tough. Like that's really tough.
It is tough, but you know, they didn't have Kevin Durant last year and look what they did, you know? Mm-hmm. So people just forget that, you know, yeah, it's Kevin Durant. Yeah. It's been their system. But, you know, it's almost the same team that they had last year, but they don't have a good bench, you know? So that's a bad thing right there. You know, when they get rid of, you know, if Kevin Durant's going to be back in 4 weeks, I mean, I've had an MCL sprain, an MCL sprain before, mm-hmm. You know, you're back in 4 weeks, but you don't feel okay until like, you know, 8 or 9, you know, maybe 10. And, you know, and that's going to stretch to the playoffs. And when you got to go against LeBron every single night, I mean, in 7-game series, I don't know. I feel like the Cavs are definitely have an advantage now, regardless, you know, whether or not, you know, Kevin Durant gets back to full health. I just think I actually think that the Warriors are going to make the finals though, but I feel like the Rockets are going to give them their run for the money in the West. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think I agree. I think Utah and Houston, to me, are two teams that I'm really intrigued to see Golden State. And, I mean, like, San Antonio's – like, it's the San Antonio Spurs. Like, they're still there. They're not – maybe not quite as good as they have been. But, you have Kawhi. You know, you get Kawhi, you got something.
Yeah, I just feel like in the West, it's a three-point shooting contest. You know what I mean? It's
– yeah.
If you're going to beat the Warriors, you got to shoot threes. I feel like they just came out. I think they just came out and said that today. I think it was Mike D'Antoni. He's like, if you want to beat the Warriors, you got to shoot threes. If I'm wrong, but yeah, that's in the thing that the Warriors don't have right now is that inside presence. Yeah, you got JaVale McGee, but now the Cavs have Andrew Bogut, Tristan Thompson, Kevin Love. I mean, not too much of the defensive guy, but. What are you going to, you know, just looking forward, just if, you know, if it happens, Cavs Warriors finals rematch for the third time, what are you looking forward to? What matchups are you going to be able to see, and what are your predictions with that?
All right, so the two things I would really look at would be, let's see how healthy Durant is if he does come back and, you know, everything is fine, you know, in the playoffs. Let's see how healthy he is. I think we're seeing how Kyle Korver fits in the series will be pretty interesting just because of his shooting. And let's see how Kevin Love sort of fits with in the 7-game series where he, you know, was marginalized to an extent last year and all this other stuff is at play. I do think Golden State, if they're fully healthy, should be the favorite. They're the best team in the NBA. They have all these guys that are just absurd in a bajillion different ways. But I wouldn't count the Cavs out. You have LeBron James. You have a shot. And I think another 6-7-game series that we remember for years seems like the most likely outcome.
So in the Cavs win, right?
If Golden State's healthy, I got to go with the Warriors. I do. I mean, that's like sucks to say. I mean, they're just really good. I mean, just the stuff they can do. And I just think like the way that the Cavs had to have so much go right in that Christmas Day game to be in that game. And then that other game is sort of weird. And I don't think it's really indicative. But the Cavs have changed since then, so I could be totally wrong. And if Durant's – and the variables of Durant not being healthy, but if Kevin Love is not healthy, there's just, like, so much we have to sort of see play out over 3 games and see how they play in the playoffs, I think, to fully understand how those two teams are going to match up against each other.
No, yeah, definitely. It's definitely a new team that the Warriors are going to be playing against when they go to – they make it to the finals playing against each other. Mm-hmm. All right. So I believe we covered almost everything. You know, we talked about almost every single player, talked about predictions, talked about the remainder of the season, what to look forward to. It's a little bit surprising, though, that the Cavs guys said that the Warriors are going to win the championship over the Cavs if it comes down to that. But, what can you say? You know, he's the expert. He sees them day in and day out. So we just got to see what's going to happen moving forward. So, thanks, Chris, for stopping by the BTS Rundown.
Yeah.
It was great having you. It was great talking about Cavs basketball because I don't really get to talk too much about Eastern Conference basketball as much as I would like. But, and all this DeMarcus stuff just happened. So I've been busy.
Yeah.
But, yeah, thanks for stopping by. I hope to talk to you during the Summer League this year when I see you. So, all right, man.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. And, if you guys haven't checked out any of my other podcasts, please go back and go to to my last episodes. Talked about Lakers basketball and a couple of them. Had a trade deadline special on there as well. So if you guys haven't done so already, please just go and subscribe. Let me know what you guys think. Join the conversation on Twitter. Follow my guy Chris as well. I'll have his at name in the description of this podcast. So thank you guys for hanging out with me. Hope you guys have a great rest of your week. All right, peace.